Studio 360.
That's the Procol Harum song, Whiter Shade of Pale. Came out in 1967, but then a generation later got revived and more permanently embedded in pop cultural consciousness on the soundtrack of The Big Chill. Baby boomers had The Big Chill. Gen X has Reality Bites, which came out in 1994, starring Winona Ryder as a recent college graduate. She's in a love triangle that embodies her own confusion about what kind of grown-up she wants to be. More like the boyfriend Ethan Hawke, the melancholic rebel poet dude, or like Ben Stiller, the charming-ish corporate yuppie. Reality Bites was also directed by Stiller, who thereby becomes this Studio 360 episode's recurring character. The movie was released in theaters 25 years ago this week, and our story about it begins with the screenwriter, who was in her early 20s at the time.
My name is Helen Childress, and I wrote the screenplay for Reality Bites. I was a student at USC in the screenwriting program. I won a writing contest for a screenplay that brought me to the attention of a producer. And since I was literally 20 years old that year, that was 1990, I was hired to write something. We didn't really know what. At the time, there was no Generation X. It was called the Baby Busters. And so for a long time, this was called the Untitled Baby Buster Project. I think we were all struggling to figure out who we were and what we wanted to say in our lives as artists. In a way, the film is a documentary about that, told in a fictional way.
I'm making this documentary about my friends, but it's really about people who are trying to find their own identity without having any real role models or heroes or anything. But
wow, sounds great. I mean, it seems like your friends would be perfect for that.
Ben Stiller directed short films and his show, The Ben Stiller Show on Fox, but this was Ben's first feature film. Ben had me in every rehearsal and on the set. It wasn't like I was there to protect the script or anyone was changing anything. It felt highly collaborative compared to what I think most movie sets feel like for writers.
I lost my job.
But you shouldn't have any trouble finding another job, Sugar Booger.
No, see, I tried. I applied for every single opening in my field, but there's nothing right now.
Lelaina Pierce is the main character, and she is having trouble making the transition from being very successful in college to sort of starting at the bottom in the real world.
Why don't you get a job at Burgerama? They'll hire you.
Because I was valedictorian of my university.
Well, you don't have to put that down on your application.
I always had Winona Ryder in mind because there was just something that was quirky and offbeat enough about her that she had a vulnerability and just an authenticity about her that I just identified with.
I was really gonna be something by the age of 23.
Honey, all you have to be by the age of 23 is yourself.
Anymore.
Then we have her best friend, Vicky. Vicky is sort of just kind of marches to the beat of her own drummer, makes her own rules.
The free clinic AIDS test, the rite of passage for our generation. We're so lucky. Come on.
Janine brought a whole kind of attitude to that character that was really not on the page. I mean, the lines were the same, but her delivery and her sense of timing, and she just has such a strong voice that she and the character sort of enmeshed.
He's weird, he's strange, he's sloppy, he's a total nightmare for women. I can't believe I haven't slept with him yet.
She kind of embodied the sexual mores of the time because we had a storyline about AIDS.
And it's not even happening to me. It's like I'm watching it on some crappy show like Melrose Place or something, right? And I'm the new character. I'm the HIV AIDS character. And I live in the building and I teach everybody that it's okay to be near me. It's okay to talk to me. And then I die. And there's everybody at my funeral wearing halter tops and chokers or something like that.
And then we have Sammy.
You know, I think the real reason that I've been celibate for so long isn't really because I'm that terrified of the big A, but because I can't really start my life without being honest about who I am.
I've met people, especially men, who say that was their first time they'd seen a depiction of a gay guy in a film who wasn't, like, you know, stereotypical, who was integrated into their friend group, and it was not a thing either way.
I want to be in there too. I want to feel miserable and happy and all of that. I mean, I want to be let back in the house.
I am not under any orders to make the world a better place.
Now, then what good are you?
Troy, that's Ethan Hawke's character. He represented a pure kind of artist. And he sort of has an armor of irony. And that's kind of how he protects himself from, I guess you'd say, the corporate world or the idea of selling out.
Did he dazzle you with his extensive knowledge of mineral water? I just would have liked to have been there to watch how you rationalized sleeping with a yuppie head cheese ball on the first date.
He's not a yuppie.
He's the reason why Cliff Notes were invented.
Ethan's super into poetry and writing and reading and music and experiencing life. You know, he comes off as a guy who is like that, and he actually is that guy.
Well, should I get married? Should I be good? Should I astound the girl next door with my velvet suit and my Faustus hood, not take her to movies but to cemeteries and tell her of werewolf tongues and forked clarinets?
I'm Lisa Loeb. I am a singer-songwriter. Right before Reality Bites, I had graduated from Brown University a couple years earlier, and I was living downtown in New York City, and I had a really great creative group of friends, who included Ethan Hawke.
What Hey That's My Bike would like to do, eventually, as a band, is travel the countryside like Woody Guthrie.
Or Richard Simmons. You know, in his commercials, I travels around, surprises people jogging.
At the time that they were making Reality Bites, Ethan had asked me to write a song for his band in the movie, because he's in a band, in a rock band in the movie, and he needed to sing a song called I'm Nothing. My song, I'm Nothing, did not get into the movie, but Ethan was still such a big fan and a supporter, he asked me for a copy of my song Stay on a cassette tape, and Ethan passed it along to all of the people who were involved in the production and the direction of the movie.
You say, I only hear what I want to.
I was temp working, and I got this call from the record company RCA Records, Ron Fair, and he said he wanted to include my song Stay on the Reality Bites soundtrack, and I was so excited. I told all the people who I was working with that I was not coming back as a temp worker, and they told me I could take as many office supplies as I wanted.
I know why the cage bird sings and everything.
Oh, yeah, why?
Because he was in a cage and he was, I don't know, he had high hopes or something. Okay, I dropped out of school before we got to that, right?
Of course, Ben Stiller's character, Michael. Ben certainly was a co-creator of the character of Michael. I think Michael was, I really liked that character because he was always trying so hard.
You know what you are, man? You know what you remind me of? You're like that guy with the, you know, with the hat and the bells and the little, you know,
the court jester.
Yeah, right, where everything's so easy to laugh at from a safe distance back in clever land. You know what happens to him? They find his skull in a grave and they go, oh, I knew him and he was funny.
Ben is so likable that became the whole thing of people to say, oh, Lilina picked the wrong guy.
And I wish I could be perfect, okay? I mean, I wish I could be like Troy riding on his melted cheese sandwich and everything, but...
Don't you dare bring Troy into this!
Hey, I wish I could be like him. I mean, I wish I could live off of creeds and mottos and all that shit, all right? But I'm in the real world here, okay? And I have ideals also.
But also, I think Michael was very prescient and is a sign of things to come, where you're commodifying life and repackaging it and selling people back to themselves in a way.
Michael Graetz, Vice President Regional Programming, In Your Face TV. We've seen it's like MTV, but with an edge.
Hi, I'm Cheryl Good, and welcome to Wedgie. This bandana by Donna Karan is blue for Crips, red for Bloods, and only costs $75.
Back in the olden days of selling out, when selling out was selling out, now selling out is just having a job.
There's no such thing as selling out anymore. There's nothing wrong with packaging yourself or your life as a brand and putting it out there. But at the time, it seemed really important.
You shut up! I busted my ass to find a job, any job. You don't even bother showing up for interviews.
What is it that you want from me, huh? What is it? You want me to get a job on the line for the next 20 years? Until I'm granted leave with my gold-plated watch and my balls full of tumors because I surrendered the one thing that means shit to me? Well, honey, you can just exhale because it's not going to happen, not in this lifetime.
Even though we were all supposed to be part of this Generation X in retrospect, in general, all the people that were part of my life, we didn't have this kind of big question mark in the sky about, like, who are we and what are we going to do?
There was a cover of Newsweek or Time about the baby buster generation. And the main thrust of it seemed to be, hey, we can't figure out how to market to these kids. These kids are, you know, they're savvy to all your tricks and, you know, they'll kind of make fun of it back to you. The fact that they are making fun of the brands as they use them is sort of, again, it's the use of irony as a self-protective kind of mechanism.
Troy, aren't you excited?
I'm bursting with fruit flavor.
Evian is naive spelled backwards.
When I see it now, it's hard. It's like reading your diary or something. I mean, it's obviously these are thoughts and, you know, conversations that I was having when I was 20 to 23. But it's funny, you know, what ends up striking a note with people. I think it was the fact that we were the people we were making the movie about. There was not that much separation between what the script was and what we were all going through at that time. There's no way to formulate, okay, we're going to make a generational movie about these crazy kids today. I think you can just make an honest movie. Like a lot of people say, is it a good movie? Is it a bad movie? In a way, I don't like that. I just think, is it an authentic movie? You know, was it honestly trying to say something? And I know that we really were. I mean, it was important to us. I guess like she says in the movie,
I know it wasn't going to, you know, end world hunger, you know, save the planet, but it just meant something to me.
Can you turn this up, please? You won't be sorry. Thank you.
That story was produced by Jenny Cataldo and BMP Audio.